Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Another Starbucks goes union. What's next for Amazon workers in New York who over the weekend decided to go union? And today on the show, it's two labor federations, the Ohio and Maine AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a number of platforms and growing. Just to throw out a few, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Tim Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, is going to be our first guest on the show. Longtime contributor. A little background. The Ohio Labor Federation represents over 1 million union workers and retirees from 40 international unions in the public, private, and federal sectors of employment. Tim began his work with the Ohio AFL-CIO as legislative director in 2002, and he became president about 10 years ago. Doing a great job, and boy, I tell you, there's a lot on the plate today. Number one, redistricting. This is an issue that's been going on for months now with no resolve, really. There's been a tug of war between the Democrats and the Republicans and the Chief Justice on the Ohio Supreme Court, who some want to impeach right now because she's siding with the Democrats. This is such a mess. It's really a mess. Today, voting begins in the state of Ohio for some races, not all. I know if you're confused, I'm confused. Tim is going to sort it out as our first guest on the show. We'll also touch on any legislative issues. Seems like everything is on the back burner now because of this redistricting battle that's going on. OhioAFLCIO.com is their website for complete updates. Our second guest on the show today is Cynthia Finney, and she is president of the Maine AFL-CIO. Website real simple, maineaflcio.org. And she's going to talk about worker power. Cynthia reports they had a couple of big organizing drives and some smaller ones in the past year. She'll run them down. The big ones include the Maine Medical Center and Bates College. They're also bringing unions together into a coalition to organize around a labor climate agenda. And they just had their public launch at the beginning of March. They introduced a new report with policy recommendations for climate jobs from Cornell University. And some of the recommendations include installing 25,000 public electric vehicle charging stations by 2030. They're also calling for moving school bus fleets to zero emissions. The council also recommends doubling and electrifying city bus operations by the year 2030. Pretty aggressive, but according to this report, the recommendations would create anywhere between 10 to 20,000 good jobs per year. Per year. For the next 20 years in Maine, if all goes well. Cynthia, by the way, is a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 1837. This is her second term as president of the Maine AFL-CIO, which includes about 160 labor organizations representing 40,000 workers across the state. She's also currently the president of the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, which is a coalition of labor, environmental, social justice, and faith organizations working together for the creation of socially, economically, and environmentally just and sustainable trade policies and a fair global economy. So Cynthia Finney, president of the Maine AFL-CIO, will be our second guest on the show. It's AFL-CIO Day on the show. And this is the first time, by the way, where you've had someone from the Maine Labor Federation on the show. So I'm excited to hear what's going on in that state. Well, you heard me talk yesterday about Amazon, especially in New York. 55% of the people working at the Staten Island facility voted to join the union. The vote was 26-54 to 21-31 voting no. So the question is, now what? Well, Amazon is going to fight back. They released a statement saying because they believe having a direct relationship with the company is best for its employees. You don't need any union in the middle. No. And they are apparently evaluating options, Amazon is, including filing objections based on the, quote, inappropriate and undue influence by the National Labor Relations Board. Its objections seem to stem primarily from a lawsuit filed by the Labor Board last month seeking to reinstate a fired employee at the warehouse, which Amazon claims was an overt attempt to influence the election. Now, these objections will wind their way through a very long and cumbersome process. You know, these things take some time. It'll begin with an NLRB appeal and ending with an appellate review in a federal court of appeals before potentially arriving at the U.S. Supreme Court. And you know how that one's going to pan out with six conservatives and three liberals. In any event, once the election results are certified by the Labor Board, Amazon will have a legal obligation to bargain in good faith with the union. And again, this union has no affiliation with any other labor union or the AFL-CIO. It's the Amazon Labor Union, ALU. And the union is already demanding bargaining dates for contract talks with Amazon management. Now, if history is any indication, the fight for a first contract could ultimately prove as protracted and intense a battle as the union campaign itself. Here's the deal. The organizers have said that their primary objective is to increase hourly wages for all warehouse workers to a minimum of $30 per hour. That's a tall order, but you got to shoot high if you want to get something good. Right now, the hourly pay is $18. They also intend to push for longer breaks during work and a greater worker control over scheduling. Amazon has every incentive, according to some reports, to resist these union demands, especially if it's seeking to stave off other union campaigns like the one that's going on in Bessemer, Alabama. They're still counting the votes down there, by the way. And right now, there's like 400-plus votes that are up in the air. So that's going to take some weeks. But as far as New York, so far only a handful of Democratic members of Congress and no Republicans, zero, have commented on the workers' victory in New York. Nobody. Now, Liz Shuler made a statement Friday night. Liz, of course, president of the AFL-CIO, and she pointed out over the past several months, the heroic Amazon workers in Bessemer have voted by mail on whether to form a union with the retail workers. Any employer, corporation, or billionaire who tries to intimidate or harass employees to interfere with the democratic voting process is breaking the law. End of story. Liz goes on to say, we will not allow Amazon to bully workers out of exercising their basic freedom. Every single contested ballot must be counted. By the way, I'll have you know, last year alone, Amazon spent $4.3 million on anti-union consultants. Actually, I thought the number would be higher. You know what that comes out to? $3,200 a day. $3,200 a day to fight the union at Amazon. Let's talk about Starbucks, the 10th and thus far the largest Starbucks store voted to unionize in a NLRB election. Workers at the company's flagship store in Manhattan, you know that's a busy store, they voted 46-36 to join Starbucks Workers United. Beside being a flagship location, the Manhattan store is one of only three Starbucks roasteries in the country, which is an arm of the company's manufacturing rather than merely a distributional apparatus. And it has almost 100 employees, which is way more than the average Starbucks. All the features make the union's success at the location not only an important milestone for the union, but also a strong indication of its propensity for sustained future success in different Starbucks locations. Now, the union organizing moment, which has spread to now 185 locations in almost 30 states, continues. And those interested in a comprehensive worker-centered exploration of the union, its strategies and goals, and its importance to the modern labor movement can find it all if you go to Vox, V-O-X. They did a piece on this over the weekend titled "How a Bunch of Starbucks Baristas Built a Labor Movement." Got to check that out. Vox, V-O-X, how a bunch of Starbucks baristas build a labor movement. This is very similar to what went on decades ago, back in the 30s, during the Depression, where people were so fed up saying, you know, we got to do something. And one more here, the New Jersey AFL-CIO and the Mercer County Central Labor Council held a creative action. This was last week to show their support for Starbucks workers. Organizing in Hopewell, New Jersey. The state Fed and the Labor Council encouraged their members to visit the Starbucks cafe wearing their union gear and order their beverages using names such as Union Strong, Union Yes, and Solidarity. Come in here from the state president, Charles Wakanich. He comes to us from the operating engineers. Great leader over there in New Jersey, by the way. He said, "We are proud to stand in solidarity with the Starbucks employees as they begin their historic election. Time and time again, when workers come together and fight for higher wages and benefits, they win. And they are winning." All right, quick break. Tim Berg on behalf of the Ohio AFL-CIO coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle
AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go down to Columbus, Ohio right now. Joining us on our live line, and as he does each and every month, is Mr. Timothy Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, ohioaflcio.com. And Tim, like many of you listening right now, especially in the state of Ohio, are wondering what the heck is going on with elections. We have a battle over redistricting, and there's some people in the Republican Party that would like to impeach the Chief Justice, who is a Republican, because she's siding with the Democrats on this. It is a total mess. Hey, Tim Berga, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Well, we are okay. It is the first day of early voting for the May 3rd primary. I'm not sure who all knows that in the state, but as you say, a lot of confusion and created by the Republicans on the Redistricting Commission. So you're right in how you've set this up.
Well, why don't we go back a little bit here? And there's reason for this, and we have this to salute the voters in the state of Ohio going back to 2015 and then again in 2018 when they said, you know, the way things are is not fair. So, Tim, why don't you just pick it up from there and tell us where we are today? Go ahead.
That's exactly right. The last 10 years, Ohio has lived under these severely rigged, or what they call gerrymandered legislative maps for the state house and for Congress. And as a result, we've got this imbalance, okay, in terms of who's representing us in Washington and here in Ohio. And it's created some severe anti-worker legislation as our primary concern. Just have to remember Senate Bill 5 and, of course, attacks on prevailing wage and overtime pay and unemployment compensation, all sorts of things, right? Mm-hmm. So in 2015, there was a bipartisan effort led by good government groups to change the way in which these maps were drawn so the politicians wouldn't simply be drawing the maps in their favor, whoever is in power to draw the maps. So in 2015, they changed the process how this would be done for the state legislative maps. And it was a bipartisan effort. Organized labor supported it with a good faith understanding that it would be, you know, implemented correctly. And then in 2018, they did the same thing for the congressional map drawing. And again, we supported it bipartisan, won overwhelmingly. And then the Republicans are in there now, and they don't want to implement it the way the voters had intended it to be. So the Ohio Supreme Court has continued to reject these state legislative maps that are being sent to them and the congressional maps that are being sent to them. And as you pointed out, it's not a Democrat Supreme Court. It's a Republican majority Supreme Court. And the Chief Justice is simply following the law. And the Republicans don't like the fact, the Republicans on the commission, that is, don't like the fact that she's following the law and are even going as far as saying, let's impeach her, if you can imagine that. And this is a Chief Justice that, you know, she has been pretty straight in terms of how she interprets the law, right? And a lot of times it hasn't been in the favor of organized labor, as one example, right? So this is a pretty obvious occasion in which she's standing up for the rule of law, and there's no way to deny it. So it's thrown the whole election system in chaos. And as a result, we're going to have two primary elections this year, if you can imagine that.
And this impeachment situation, it can't even happen under the time allotted because Justice O'Connor is done at the end of this year. So it's amazing that they're even throwing that word out right now because the process wouldn't be complete in time. In the meantime, as you pointed out, people are going to the polls today. Who are they voting for today, then, in the state of Ohio?
Yeah, right. So where we're at is, review the bidding here. The Ohio Supreme Court has rejected three state legislative maps now that have been sent to them and are even looking to hold the commissioners in contempt for not following the process. They've sent the fourth map over to the Ohio, and it's been litigated again. The Ohio Supreme Court's looking at the fourth state legislative map. So And then the federal court got involved. The Republicans asked the federal court to get involved as they were looking to try to do an end run around the Ohio Supreme Court. So the state legislative races will not be on the May 3rd primary election ballot.
Okay.
What's going to happen with that is the Ohio Supreme Court will review this fourth set of legislative maps, which looks every bit as unconstitutional as the third set that was sent over to them. The federal court in Southern Ohio is looking at an April 20th date now to hear the Republican brought forward case. And if the state legislative map case isn't resolved by then, the expectation is the federal court will make a determination on what map they're going to go with. And the expectation there is to then put that map in play for a state legislative primary on August 2nd. So no state legislative candidates on the May 3rd primary election. Voting begins today. Early voting begins today for that. So you'll have everything except state legislative candidates and state Board of Education candidates. It's the state Board of Education candidates are based on Senate districts.
So
while that's going on, you will have congressional candidates on the primary election ballot that starts today.
Okay.
While the Supreme Court is still reviewing that litigation, but they've determined that their timeline and schedule for ruling and determining and finalizing the congressional maps is going to fall outside of a timeline to get a May 2022 primary for the new congressional maps. So the plaintiff's hopes is that the congressional litigation goes on and they have new constitutionally sound congressional maps in time for the 2024 elections.
Very confusing, but
yes.
This is something that we shouldn't even be talking about this right now if people did their job. That's the problem. They just kind of delayed the process, and here we are today with voting starting and a lot of confusion out there. Let me ask you, I've heard the Justice O'Connor talking about contempt of court, which could be jailable. I mean, would you see any of that happening right now because of what's going on, Tim?
Well, twice now she has threatened contempt of court if the Republicans on the Redistricting Commission don't explain why they keep sending over these illegitimate maps, I'll call them.
Yeah.
So she did ask for a show cause hearing for contempt. If they don't explain themselves, the deadline for them to explain themselves why they shouldn't be held in contempt was yesterday at 9 a.m. So all the commissioners then sent forward briefs on why they should not be held in contempt. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's clear that they're not only delaying Flash, but they are ignoring the court's directives and they're obfuscating. So it's intentional and they're creating this chaos. And then the chaos that the Republicans are creating on the Redistricting Commission, they want to place the blame on the Supreme Court. Republicans and Democrats and keep saying you're not following the law.
Right.
And all the good government groups that are out there that, you know, sought this process and went to the ballot in a bipartisan way are the ones saying and agreeing with the court, you're not following the process that the voters voted on. Let's just have fair districts. May the best person win. And quit giving an unfair advantage to the party that's in power drawing the maps.
And Tim, let's just be clear here. The Republicans are still in power, according to the layout, political layout in the state of Ohio, because when you take a look at the voting rolls, it's like 54% Republican, 46% Democrats. But apparently the Republicans want like a supermajority the way they're carving up those districts, especially in the first round. Wasn't that the case, Tim?
That's the case. The Supreme Court has said Republicans, when you aggregate the vote over the last 10 years statewide, the Republicans have an 8-point advantage. And they keep sending forward maps that give them, a much greater advantage than that. And they just can't come to terms with the ballot initiatives that they supported and the fact that the court is upholding that and following the rule of law and the Constitution, and they just don't want to accept it. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame, and it's caused, as you say, great confusion. But We're urging, you know, everybody get out there and vote. For your listeners, the congressional primary up in the Cleveland area, we've endorsed for re-election Congresswoman Chantel Brown. She's been a strong supporter of working people and organized labor, and was a key vote in the House on the infrastructure bill. So there are some key primaries going on around the state. So we're asking all working people to pay attention to this primary. And then we'll have to get ready and pay attention for potentially a primary in August as well before the general election in November.
Tim, with all this going on, is anything else getting done in the state house, or is this occupying all the time for the lawmakers?
Well, sometimes that can be a good thing if not much else is getting done, given the track record over the last 10 years. So, no, not a whole lot else is getting done. They're starting to work on capital appropriations and budget matters will be taking up and the like. But most everything has taken a back seat to get this done. And it's just a shame that all the effort and work that was put in to change the system here, and the party in power just doesn't want to adhere to it. And it's a terrible waste of time. We didn't even mention having two primary elections in Ohio, Flash, is going to cost the taxpayers somewhere around $30 million.
Wow.
And the County Board of Elections do not want two primaries, just the administration of it, the cost of it, the confusion of it. So they have written the commission saying we don't want two primaries, but here we are. Again, the Republicans are working awfully hard to do the wrong thing. And as a result, this is the situation we're in. And I hate the fact that we're in this, because in organized labor, we'll support those who support our issues, organized labor, working people, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, independent. It doesn't matter, but we're just seeking some balance in how governance is structured in this state. And when you look at these maps, you just eyeball the maps that we're currently been under for the last 10 years, and they make no sense whatsoever when you look at them. And it can only be in place for one reason, and that is to cut them up and slice them and dice them for political gain.
Right.
And that's just not good governance, and that's what this is all about.
We should point out, too, I saw a story last week. This is going on in New York, but it's the Democrats that are gerrymandering the maps over there. And I know that one is headed to court. So, you know, if you take a look at the history of gerrymandering, both sides are guilty. It just so happens that the Republicans in the state of Ohio are now in power. You mentioned the $30 million. Is that $30 million for two primaries? So is that like $15 million apiece? Is that right?
No, it's $30 million extra to do two primaries.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Holy
smokes. To do fair and secure and safe elections, you know, the county boards of elections do a tremendous job working on all this stuff and getting ready and having the early vote to allow people to access to the polls and get out to. This is all needed and justified. But what's not needed and justified is to have to create a situation where you have to hold two primaries. That's just wrong. But again, that's the situation we're in, and we'll get through it.
So to cut to the chase here, you got lawmakers not doing their job properly, and the voters of Ohio have to pay the price for it when you take a look at this whole situation. That's exactly how you can summarize this. So sad. Yeah,
sad. You boiled it down to its essence, I guess. Yeah.
All right, one more issue here. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, it looks like we're getting some Republican support. I heard yesterday that Mitt Romney and Murkowski, out of Alaska, have joined Susan Collins in Maine supporting that nomination. So it looks like everything is going to be fine. But I'll tell you, the shenanigans that went on in those hearings a couple of weeks ago was amazing. But Tim, I mean, you've been in this process a long time. You probably were not surprised by what you saw and heard, were you?
I watched a fair amount of it, and those that were really asking questions really unbecoming of the Senate were those that are likely interested in becoming the party's nominee for the presidency in 2024, right? So there was a political element to it for sure. Judge Jackson is eminently qualified to be sitting on the highest court in the land. She's been confirmed three times already by the U.S. Senate for various posts. And when you look at her record, and the AFL-CIO has endorsed her candidacy here, she has shown a great willingness and understanding of a commitment to uphold rights of workers. That's what stood out to the AFL-CIO when they looked at her record of more than 600 opinions. So we're supporting her candidacy. I believe later this week it'll go before the full U.S. Senate. There will be bipartisan support, and I'm optimistic that that confirmation will go through.
Workers first. I like that. All right, Tim, we're going to leave it on that note. OhioAFLCIO.org for more information. You take care, my friend, and hopefully we'll have some better news next month on the redistricting, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, quick break. Cynthia Finney is president of the Maine AFL-CIO, and she's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, all you got to do is sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go to the state of Maine right now. And joining us on our live line for the first time on America's Workforce Radio and Podcast is Cynthia Finney. And Cynthia is a member of the Electrical Workers Union, 1837, and she is in her second term as president of the Maine AFL-CIO, which is a federation of approximately 160 labor unions representing about 40,000 workers across a state of 1.3 million people. Cynthia Finney, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Oh, it's great to be here. Yeah, it's a good day.
You know what? I'm really appreciative of you joining the show. I don't know too much. I did visit Maine, your state. This had to be 30, 35 years ago. Bangor, Maine. Beautiful area. Bar Harbor. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
The lobster is spectacular. But
yeah,
I don't know much about the labor history there. I did some research on your website, and I see a lot of good things happening. But let's talk about you, because your history is kind of fascinating in itself. You started in the shoe industry when there was a shoe industry. Talk to me about that.
Yes, the shoe industry used to be big in Maine because we've got the trees to make the tannin for tanning the leather, and then the shoe industry was a natural outgrowth of that. I was trained actually by L.L. Bean to be a hand sewer, which is doing hand work on a particular style of shoe. And I worked there for 11 and a half years. I worked in a couple of other shoe shops. Those are some of the jobs that moved overseas when it got easy to do that, and they could get cheap labor forces over there that we can't compete with because of different labor laws, different economic conditions.
That had
That's
to be pretty
tough.
That's
when I left that industry.
Yeah, being a hand sewer for the shoes, that sounds pretty pretty tedious to do that over a length of time.
Well, you know, we had a great time. It's a quiet job, and so we could talk all day or listen to the radio. And we all sewed a couple of dozen to three dozen pairs of shoes a day. And it was actually really a wonderful environment to work in and great people to work with. And we were really, it's a craft, so we were really proud of the work that we did.
Well, that industry dried up, and then you found your way into the IBEW. Talk to me about that, and also Local 1837.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get a union job after that job. I could see the advantages there would be to having a better ability to work collectively, although we did have a sit-down strike once when I was at Beans briefly. So I sought work at the electric utility, Central Maine Power. It's the largest electric utility in our state and covers the area I lived in. And I got a job there and was able to become a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1837, and got involved right away and just found being involved with the union really important. And I kind of all grew from there.
Mm-hmm. Any challenges being a female working in the trades and also getting up to the presidency of the AFL-CIO? I have to ask you that because it's especially now with Liz Shuler coming from the same union.
My union sister.
right. So any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there were numbers of women who came before me in both trades I was in. The hand sewing job, despite its name, is also a traditionally male job because it requires quite a bit of strength to do that particular work. And there were women who came before me, so I was not, you know, the cutting edge of being a pioneer. But it was, you know, it's still, there were people who felt that women shouldn't be in those jobs and would say so. And when I was running for president of the Maine AFL-CIO, there was, you know, at least a person or two who said directly, we don't need a woman to be in charge of this organization. But for the most part, I have not encountered steep resistance. So I credit my sisters who came before me and had to overcome that steep resistance for paving the way a bit for people like myself.
Very good. Let's talk about organizing drives. And I was reading earlier that you have a couple of big wins under your belt, Maine Medical Center and Bates College. Can you tell us about those, Cynthia?
Yeah, we are in a moment across the country, not just in Maine, when workers are actually realizing that when they come together, they have quite a bit more power than they might have realized before. And the nurses at Maine Medical Center, there are about 2,000 of them. They have tried twice before to unionize. I believe the first time was in 1972. The second time, I don't remember the year, but this time they reached out to the Maine State Nurses Association, and over the course of, it was pretty much a solid 2 years of working together to come together and really make that election successful and win that election, which they won sometime a year ago in the fall, but the ballots didn't get counted until April. And we're in a similar situation at Bates. They did work together over about a year, and different than unions that have organized on other college campuses, the Bates workers really felt that they wanted all their work co-workers to be in one union unit. All the way from cafeteria workers to adjunct faculty, they worked with every worker who was legally able to be part of their union, Bates Education and Staff Association, organization, BASO. They worked with all those folks and held an election, and currently the ballots are held up at the National Labor Relations Board, and we do not know the count yet because the college is contesting that unit and saying that cafeteria workers can't possibly have anything in common with, I'm of course paraphrasing, the adjunct faculty, for example, and wants to break up that unit, which of course is a classic tactic attempt to divide and conquer. But those workers really want to be together in one union, and it's very exciting.
So the cafeteria workers don't have anything in common with the adjuncts. So you know what? You know how you respond to that? They're both treated like dirt. That's the way to...
there you go.
That's the way to answer that one. That's why we need the union here. I have to ask you, these happened in the last year, and is this like pandemic related? Because as you know, with this great resignation, there's a lot of people, especially on the front line. I mean, medical center is a good example there. The nurses there, and they're saying, wait a minute. We got to work in these conditions where people are dying. You've seen that kind of that uprising in the state of Maine throughout the unions that you oversee?
There's been a lot of activity that is pandemic related. I'm not sure that the one at Maine Medical Center was the issue of, really difficult nurse-patient ratios is one that just cuts across the industry that often motivates nurses to come together to make change in their workplace. And that's one of the things that these nurses were focused on. And at Bates, I'm also not sure because I think that the rumblings of this maybe started before the pandemic, but I do think that the pandemic really brought to light a lot of the mistreatment and the potential for mistreatment when workers' needs and safety were disregarded, and also when management, showed in some ways their true colors at the Maine Medical Center, for example. Even though they put strict restrictions on the nurses about, and nobody could come into the hospital, during the pandemic, but they actually gave vaccinations to the union busters back in the early time when only very specific groups of people were eligible to be vaccinated. They vaccinated the union busters so they could have free run of the hospital and talk to everyone.
Wow.
That was just such a blatant, Yeah.
Unbelievable. Cynthia, I have to take a quick break here. Cynthia Finney joining us on our live line from Maine, and she is president of the Maine AFL-CIO. Website is maineaflcio.org. They're also on Twitter. That would be MEAFLCIO. You could follow them there. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to Maine, Augusta, Maine. Joining us on a live line today is Cynthia Finney. She is president of the Maine AFL-CIO. Cynthia, I want to talk about the climate change and the labor component. And I see that you launched the Maine Labor Climate Council. This was the beginning of March. And from what I read, it sounds pretty exciting. It's a tall order. We're talking about electric vehicle charging stations, zero emissions for school bus fleets. I'd like to get your perspective on the rollout and some of the details. Go ahead.
Very excited about this. The climate challenge is, of course, something that's facing all of humanity. It's going to impact working families just like anyone else. And we really believe that it's important to have labor be part of the voice about how we're going to address the challenge. We think there's the potential to have a lot of jobs created as we switch to clean energy. We want to be sure that those jobs are high road jobs, not, you know, lowest common denominator, pay the least, et cetera. Unions, that's our business, is making jobs that can sustain families. So we want to engage with that. And it's also true that to address the challenge of the changing climate is going to require, in the words of a good friend of mine, unprecedented solidarity. So that means including workers and unions and the voices of everyone who's going to be affected. So we brought some unions together to start talking about this. Some of our IBEW unions, one in particular, were already working on getting the work in the solar industry, making sure that those were good jobs. And so we've built from there, bringing in more unions, looking at more places. We had help from Cornell University and the Climate Jobs National Resource Center doing some research to see what contribution to climate change Maine actually makes, and so where we could have the biggest impact. I think it sounded like you were quoting from our report there that we released at our launch on March 1st, which looked at those places where we think we can make a difference and where we want to be sure the jobs are good, and we want to build excitement among unions for transitioning well and having a good outcome.
Well, I was looking at that report, and I'm reading 10,000 to 20,000 good jobs per year for the next 20 years just in the state of Maine. Maybe we could delve into that. Now, is this across a lot of the trades? You mentioned the IBEW, who come from the Electrical Workers Union, and yeah, there's a connection, especially with the charging stations and all that, but that sounds pretty doable, and also the 2030. I'm just wondering if that's a tall order. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think it's a tall order, but it's doable, I believe, if we come together, if we are in solidarity behind those goals, and if we can build that solidarity out beyond unions to the, you know, the larger population. And yes, you mentioned the trades, of course. You know, building things is what they do. That'll be really important. Our transportation union is also really excited about transit. And at our last meeting, one of the postal workers was talking. You may have heard nationally there's talk about the fleet of vehicles that the post office is about to purchase and whether those will be electric or traditional fossil fuel. So there's a lot of potential there and many different fronts to move on and act on.
And the charging stations, if you don't mind, let's get into that, because in the Build Back Better bill and also the infrastructure bill, let's go into the infrastructure bill because Build Back Better is kind of tabled for now. But in the infrastructure bill, wasn't it specific to charging stations there? What do we know about that?
I believe there was some specific money there for that. And So we want to make sure that's what it ends up getting spent on, and that it's built by workers who are getting good wages and benefits, because that's going to be quite an infrastructure.
What about windmills? I'm thinking it's got to be, I know it's windy in that area. You got the Atlantic over there and you got a huge coastline. Has there been some research into how many wind, or maybe there's some already happening there? Where are we with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Maine, unlike some of the other places on the coast, Maine would require a deep water stations if they were to do offshore wind. And as you mentioned earlier when we were just chatting, the lobster we have in Maine, and of course we have to preserve that fishing ground, and so there's a lot of moving parts there to be part of the, you know, making sure that those jobs, if they build out the wind, are good jobs, and also making sure that things get built in a way that doesn't impact our fishing grounds. That's an important and traditional part of Maine's economy.
Aren't the lobster fishermen represented by a union? I want to say it's the Machinists Union, isn't that?
You're right. They are. Yeah. Lobster 207 online.
All right. Yeah, we have a dear friend that's a contributor to the show, Tommy Buffenbarger, retired general president of the
Oh, yeah. Nations.
Yeah, great guy, great guy. I remember talking to him about that, and he loves the show. And I remember doing a show about the union that represents the lobster fishermen and women. And it's in Maine. It's in Maine. So good stuff happening.
Yep.
Good stuff happening. We got a couple of minutes left here. And I want to talk about the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, which is a coalition. I was reading of labor, environmental, social justice, and you're president of the Maine Fair Trade Campaign. Can you tell us some more about that and where you're headed with that?
Yeah, that organization grew out of an effort quite some time ago now that established in our state a commission, Citizen Trade Policy Commission, which was established by the legislature and which includes legislators and then representatives from a wide array of civil society, and looks at trade policy and its impact on Maine and Maine laws. And that commission has done a lot of work to make sure that Maine legislators understand how trade agreements can potentially impact what they can and can't do as legislators, and also how various components of trade agreements might impact Maine's economy. And we were, of course, active in the fight against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was going to vastly curtail local and state legislatures, elected bodies of any kind, ability to make decisions. But those kind of provisions are in a lot of trade agreements. And currently, we're looking at we're working with a bunch of other national organizations, trying to get a waiver to some intellectual property rights that are preventing vaccines and other COVID-related needs from being able to be produced in other countries at the scale that's needed in order to really stomp down this pandemic.
So, Cynthia, I know you've had a history with this Maine Fair Trade Campaign almost 20 years now. In your opinion, it's been pretty effective? You've been able to get some results out of it?
Yes, we have. One of our most exciting immediate results was there's a committee called the Intergovernmental Trade Policy Committee. I got that wrong, but it's IGPAC. And they didn't even have a state legislator represented on that committee. It was really very industry focused. And there is now a seat on that committee, which does important advising to the United States Trade Representative. There's a seat on that committee for a state legislator, and that was due to our, you know, pushing for that.
Good for you.
The commission.
Squeaky wheel gets the oil. That's how it works. Very good. Very good.
Yep.
Cynthia Finney, president of the Maine AFL-CIO. You can find more at maineaflcio.org. Great job today. Thank you so much. I learned a lot about your state. Let's stay in touch down the road. How's that sound?
That sounds great, and it's been really great talking with you.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the postal workers, the American Federation of Musicians, and We talked to a labor organizer on Amazon. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.